thought he'd take it to the country whence he came, but he preserved it for the worst of woes. For if thou art in sooth what this man saith, God pity thee, thou wast to misery born.
Ah me, ah me, all brought to pass, all true. O light, may I behold thee nevermore. I stand a wretch in birth, in wedlock cursed, a parricide, incestuously, triply cursed.
Exit Oedipus.
Races of mortal man, whose life is but a span, I count ye but the shadow of a shade, for he who most doth know of bliss hath but the show. A moment, and the visions pale and fade. Thy fall, O Oedipus, thy piteous fall, warns me none born of women blessed to call. For he of marksmen best, O Zeus, outshot the rest, and won the prize supreme of wealth and power. By him the vulture maid was quelled, her witchery laid. He rose our savior, and the land's strong tower. We hailed thee king, and from that day adored the mighty Thebes, the universal lord. O heavy hand of fate, who now more desolate, whose tale more sad than thine, whose lot more dire. O Oedipus, discrowned head, thy cradle was thy marriage bed. One harborage sufficed for son and sire. How could the soil thy father eared so long endure to bear in silence such a wrong? All-seeing time hath caught guilt and to justice brought. The son and sire commingled in one bed. O child of Laius, ill-starred race, would I had ne'er beheld thy face. I raise for thee a dirge as o'er the dead. Yet sooth to say, through thee I drew new breath. And now, through thee I feel a second death.
Enter second messenger.
Most grave and reverend senators of Thebes, what deeds ye soon must hear, what sights behold, how will ye mourn, if true-born patriots ye reverence still the race of Labdacus? Not Ister, nor all Phasis' flood, I ween, could wash away the bloodstains from this house, the ills it shrouds, or soon will bring to light ills wrought of malice, not unwittingly, the worst to bear are self-inflicted wounds.
Grievous enough, for all our tears and groans, our past calamities, what canst thou add?
My tale is quickly told and quickly heard. Our sovereign lady queen Jocasta's dead.
Alas, poor queen, how came she by her death?
By her own hand, and all the horror of it, not having seen yet cannot comprehend. Nathless, as far as my poor memory serves, I will relate the unhappy lady's woe. When in her frenzy she had passed inside the vestibule, she hurried straight to win the bridal chamber, clutching at her hair with both her hands, and once within the room, she shut the doors behind her with a crash. "Laius," she cried, and called her husband dead. Long, long ago, her thought was of that child, by him begot, the son by whom the sire was murdered, and the mother left to breed with her own seed. A monstrous progeny. Then she bewailed the marriage bed whereon, poor wretch, she had conceived a double brood, husband by husband, children by her child. What happened after that I cannot tell, nor how the end befell, for with a shriek burst on us, Oedipus. All eyes were fixed on Oedipus, as up and down he strode, nor could we mark her agony to the end. For stalking to and fro, a sword, he cried. Where is the wife? No wife, the teeming womb that bore a double harvest, me and mine. And in his frenzy some supernal power. No mortal, surely, none of us who watched him, guided his footsteps with a terrible shriek, as though one beckoned him. He crashed against the folding doors, and from their staples forced the wrenched bolts, and hurled himself within. Then we beheld the woman hanging there, a running noose entwined about her neck. But when he saw her, with a maddened roar, he loosed the cord, and when her wretched corpse lay stretched on earth, what followed, oh, 'Twas dread. He tore the golden brooches that upheld her queenly robes, upraised them high, and smote full on his eyeballs, uttering words like these, 'No more shall ye behold such sights of woe, deeds I have suffered and myself have wrought. Henceforth, quenched in darkness, shall ye see those ye should ne'er have seen, now blind to those whom when I saw I vainly yearned to know.' Such was the burden of his moan, whereto, not once but oft, he struck with his hand, uplift his eyes, and at each stroke the ensanguined orbs bedewed his beard, not oozing drop by drop, but one black gory downpour thick as hail. Such evils issuing from the double source have whelmed them both, confounding man and wife. Till now the storied fortune of this house was fortunate indeed, but from this day woe, lamentation, ruin, death, disgrace, all ills that can be named, all are theirs.
But hath he still no respite from his pain?
He cries, 'Unbar the doors and let all Thebes behold the slayer of his sire, his mother's—' That shameful word my lips may not repeat. He vows to fly, self-banished from the land, nor stay to bring upon his house the curse himself had uttered. But he has no strength, nor one to guide him, and his tortures more than man can suffer, as yourselves will see. For lo, the palace portals are unbarred, and soon ye shall behold a sight so sad that he who must abhorred would pity it.'
Enter Oedipus, blinded.
Woeful sight, more woeful none these sad eyes have looked upon. Whence this madness none can tell, who did cast on thee his spell, prowling all his life around, leaping with a demon bound. Hapless wretch, how can I brook on thy misery to look? Though to gaze on thee I yearn, much to question, much to learn. Horror-struck away I turn. Ah, me! Ah, woe is me! Ah, whither am I born? How like a ghost forlorn my voice flits from me on the air. On the demon goads, the end, ah, where? An end too dread to tell, too dark to see.
Dark, dark, the horror of darkness like a shroud wraps me and bears me on through mist and cloud. Ah, me! Ah, me, what spasms athwart me shoot, what pangs of agonizing memory! No marvel if in such plight thou feel'st the double weight of past and present woes. Ah, friend, still loyal, constant still and kind, thou carest for the blind, I know thee near, and though bereft of eyes, thy voice I recognize. O doer of dread deeds, how couldst thou mar thy vision thus? What demon goaded thee? Apollo, friend Apollo, he it was who brought these ills to pass, but the right hand that dealt the blow was mine, none other. How could I longer see when sight brought no delight?
Alas, 'tis as thou sayest.
Say, friends, can any look or voice or touch of love henceforth my heart rejoice? Haste, friends, no fond delay. Take the twice cursed away. Far from all ken, the man abhorred of gods, accursed of men.
Oh, thy despair well suits thy desperate case. Would I had never looked upon thy face.
My curse on him, whoever unrived the waif's fell fetters and my life revived.
He meant me well, yet had he left me there, he had saved my friends and me a world of care. I, too, had wished it so. Then had I never come to shed my father's blood, nor climbed my mother's bed, the monstrous offspring of a womb defiled, co-mate of him who gendered me, and child. Was ever man before afflicted thus, like Oedipus? I cannot say that thou hast counseled well, for thou wert better dead than living blind.
What's done was well done. Thou canst never shake my firm belief, a truce to argument. For had I sight,
I know not with what eyes I could have met my father in the shades or my poor mother, since against the twain I sinned, a sin no gallows could atone. But ye say the sight of children joys a parent's eyes. What born as mine were born. No such a sight could never bring me joy, nor this fair city with its battlements, its temples, and the statues of its gods, sights from which I, now wretchedest of all, once ranked the foremost Theban in all Thebes. By my own sentence am cut off, condemned, by my own proclamation against the wretch, the miscreant by heaven itself declared unclean, and of the race of liars. Thus branded as a felon by myself, how had I dared to look you in the face? Nay, had I known a way to choke the springs of hearing, I had never shrunk to make a dungeon of this miserable frame, cut off from sight and hearing, for 'tis bliss to bide in regions sorrow cannot reach. Why didst thou harbor me, Cithaeron? Why didst thou not take and slay me? Then I never had shown to men the secret of my birth. O Polybus, O Corinth, O my home, home of my ancestors, so wast thou called. How fair a nursling then I seemed, how foul the canker that lay festering in the bud. Now is the blight revealed of root and fruit, ye triple high roads, and thou hidden glen, coppice, and pass where meet the three-branched ways. Ye drank my blood, the life-blood these hands spilt my father's. Do ye call to mind perchance those deeds of mine ye witnessed, and the work I wrought thereafter when I came to Thebes? Oh, fatal wedlock! Thou didst give me birth, and having borne me sowed again my seed, mingling the blood of fathers, brothers, children, brides, wives, and mothers, an incestuous brood, all horrors that are wrought beneath the sun, horrors so foul to name them were unmeet. Oh, I abjure you, hide me anywhere, far from this land, or slay me straight, or cast me down to the depths of ocean out of sight. Come hither, deign to touch an abject wretch. Draw near and fear not, I myself must bear the load of guilt that none but I can share.
Enter Creon.
Lo, here is Creon, the one man to grant thy prayer by action or advice, for he is left the state's sole guardian in thy stead. Ah me, what words to accost him can I find? What cause has he to trust me? In the past I have beproved his rancorous enemy.
Not in derision, Oedipus, I come, nor to upbraid thee with thy past misdeeds.
To bystanders.
But shame upon you, if ye feel no sense of human decencies. At least revere the sun whose light beholds and nurtures all. Leave not thus nakedly for all to gaze at a horror neither earth nor rain from heaven nor light will suffer. Lead him straight within. For it is seemly that a kinsman's woes be heard by kin and seen by kin alone. Oh, listen, since thy presence comes to me a shock of glad surprise, so noble thou, and I so vile, oh, grant me one small boon. I ask it not on my behalf, but thine.
And what the favor thou wouldst crave of me?
Forth from thy borders thrust me with all speed. Set me within some vasty desert where no mortal voice shall greet me any more.
This had I done already, but I deemed it first behoove me to consult the god.
His will was set forth fully to destroy the parricide, the scoundrel, and I am he.
Yea, so he spake. But in our present plight, 'twere better to consult the god anew.
Dare ye inquire concerning such a wretch?
Yea, for thyself wouldst credit now his word.
Aye, and on thee in all humility I lay this charge. Let her who lies within receive such burial as thou shalt ordain. Such rites 'tis thine, as brother, to perform. Before myself, oh never, let my Thebes, the city of my sires, be doomed to bear the burden of my presence while I live. No, let me be a dweller on the hills on yonder Mount Cithaeron.
famed as mine, my tomb predestined for me by my sire and mother while they lived, that I may die slain as they sought to slay me when alive. This much I know full surely, nor disease shall end my days, nor any common chance, for I had never been snatched from death unless I was predestined to some awful doom. So be it. I reck not how fate deals with me, but my unhappy children for my sons be not concerned. O Creon, they are men, and for themselves, wherever they be, can fend. But for my daughters twain, poor innocent maids, who ever sat beside me at the board, sharing my viands, drinking of my cup, for them I pray thee care, and if thou willst, O might, I feel their touch and make my moan. Hear me, O prince, my noble-hearted prince. Could I but blindly touch them with my hands, I'd think they still were mine as when I saw. Antigone and Ismene are led in. What say I? Can it be my pretty ones whose sobs I hear? Has Creon pitied me and sent me my two darlings? Can this be? 'Tis true, 'twas I procured thee this delight, knowing the joy they were to thee of old. God speed thee, and as meet for bringing them, may Providence deal with thee kindlier than it has dealt with me. O children mine, where are ye? Let me clasp you with these hands, a brother's hands, a father's hands that made lackluster sockets of his once bright eyes, hands of a man who blindly, recklessly became your sire by her from whom he sprang. Though I cannot behold you, I must weep in thinking of the evil days to come, the slights and wrongs that men will put upon you. Where ye go to feast or festival, no merrymaking will it prove for you, but oft abashed in tears ye will return. And when ye come to marriageable years, where's the bold wooers who will jeopardize to take unto himself such disrepute as to my children's children still must cling? For what of infamy is lacking here? Their father slew his father, sowed his seed where he himself was gendered, and begat these maidens at the source wherefrom he sprang. Such are the gibes that men will cast at you. Who then will wed you? None, I ween. But ye must pine, poor maids, in single barrenness. O prince, Minosius' son, to thee I turn. With thee it rests to father them, for we their natural parents, both of us, are lost. O leave them not to wander, poor unwed, thy kin. Nor let them share my low estate. O pity them so young, and but for thee all destitute. Thy hand upon it, prince. To you, my children, I had much to say. Were ye but ripe to hear, let this suffice. Pray ye, may find some home and live content, and may your lot prove happier than your sire's. Thou hast had enough of weeping. Pass within. I must obey. Though 'tis grievous, weep not. Everything must have its day. Well, I go, but on conditions. What thy terms for going say? Send me from the land in exile. Ask this of the gods, not me. But I am the gods' abhorrence. Then they soon will grant thy plea. Lead me hence, then. I am willing. Come, but let thy children go. Rob me not of these my children. Crave not mastery in all, for the mastery that raised thee was thy bane and wrought thy fall. Look ye, countrymen and Thebans, this is Oedipus the Great, he who knew the Sphinx's riddle and was mightiest in our state. Who of all our townsmen gazed not on his fame with envious eyes? Now in what a sea of troubles sunk and overwhelmed he lies. Therefore wait to see life's ending, ere thou count one mortal blessed. Wait till free from pain and sorrow he has gained his final rest. The End. Antigone. Dramatis Persona. daughters of Oedipus, Antigone, Ismene, Creon, king of Thebes, Eurydice, his wife, Haman, his son, Tiresias, the blind prophet, guard set to watch the corpse of Polynices. First messenger, second messenger from the house, chorus of Theban elders. Scene. The same as in Oedipus the King, an open space before the royal palace, once that of Oedipus, at Thebes. The back scene represents the front of the palace, with three doors, of which the central and largest is the principal entrance into the house. The time is at daybreak on the morning after the fall of the two brothers, Eteocles and Polynices, and the flight of the defeated Argives. Antigone calls Ismene forth from the palace in order to speak to her alone.
Ismene, sister mine own dear sister, knowest thou what ill there is of all bequeathed by Oedipus that Zeus fulfills not for us twain while we live? Nothing painful is there, nothing fraught with ruin, no shame, no dishonor, that I have not seen in thy woes and mine. And now, what new edict is this of which they tell, that our captain hath just published to all Thebes? Knowest thou aught? Hast thou heard? Or is it hidden from thee that our friends are threatened with the doom of our foes? No word of friends, Antigone, gladsome or painful, hath come to me, since we two sisters were bereft of brothers twain, killed in one day by twofold blow, and since in this last night the Argive host hath fled, know no more whether my fortune be brighter or more grievous. I knew it well, and therefore sought to bring thee beyond the gates of the court, that thou mightest hear alone. What is it? 'Tis plain that thou art brooding on some dark tidings. What hath not Creon destined our brothers, the one to honored burial, the other to unburied shame? Eteocles, they say, with due observance of rite and custom, he hath laid in the earth for his honor among the dead below. But the hapless corpse of Polynices, as rumor saith, it hath been published to the town that none shall entomb him or mourn, but leave unwept, unsepulchred, a welcome store for the birds as they espy him, to feast on at will. Such 'tis said is the edict that the good Creon hath set forth for thee and for me, yes, for me, and is coming hither to proclaim it clearly to those who know it not, nor counts the matter light. But whoso disobeys in aught, his doom is death by stoning before all the folk. Thou knowest it now, and thou wilt soon show whether thou art nobly bred, or the base daughter of a noble line.
Poor sister, and if things stand thus, what could I hope to do or undo? Consider if thou wilt share the toil and the deed. In what venture? What can be thy meaning? Wilt thou aid this hand to lift the dead? Thou wouldst bury him, when 'tis forbidden to Thebes. I will do my part, and thine, if thou wilt not, to a brother. False to him will I never be found. Overbold, when Creon hath forbidden? Nay, he hath no right to keep me from mine own. Ah, me, think, sister, how our father perished amid hate and scorn, when sins bared by his own search had moved him to strike both eyes with self-blinding hand. Then the mother-wife, two names in one, with twisted noose did despite unto her life, and last our two brothers in one day, each shedding hapless one a kinsman's blood, wrought out with mutual hands their common doom. And now we in turn, we two left all alone, think how we shall perish, more miserably than all the rest, if, in defiance of the law, we brave a king's decree or his powers. Nay, we must remember first that we were born women, as who should not strive with men. Next, that we are ruled of the stronger, so that we must obey in these things and in things yet sorer. I, therefore, asking the spirits infernal to pardon, seeing that force is put on me herein, will hearken to our rulers, for 'tis witless to be overbusy. I will not urge thee, no, nor if thou yet shouldst have the mind, wouldst thou be welcome as a worker with me. Nay,
Be what thou wilt. But I will bury him. Well for me to die in doing that. I shall rest a loved one with him whom I have loved, sinless in my crime, for I owe a longer allegiance to the dead than to the living. In that world I shall abide forever, but if thou wilt be guilty of dishonoring laws which the gods have established in honor.
I do them no dishonor, but to defy the state, I have no strength for that.
Such be thy plea. I then will go to heap the earth above the brother whom I love.
Alas, unhappy one, how I fear for thee!
Fear not for me. Guide thine own fate aright.
At least, then, disclose this plan to none, but hide it closely, and so too will I.
Oh, denounce it! Thou wilt be far more hateful for thy silence if thou proclaim not these things to all.
Thou hast a hot heart for chilling deeds.
I know that I please where I am most bound to please.
Aye, if thou canst, but thou wouldst what thou canst not.
Why then, when my strength fails, I shall have done.
A hopeless quest should not be made at all.
If thus thou speakest, thou wilt have hatred from me, and will justly be subject to the lasting hatred of the dead. But leave me, and the folly that is mine alone, to suffer this dread thing, for I shall not suffer aught so dreadful as an ignoble death.
Go then, if thou must, and of this be sure, that though thine errand is foolish, to thy dear ones thou art truly dear.
Exit Antigone, on the spectator's left. Ismene retires into the palace by one of the two side doors. When they have departed, the chorus of Theban elders enters. Beam of the sun, fairest light that ever dawned on Thebe of the Seven Gates, thou hast shone forth at last, eye of golden day, arisen above Dirce's streams. The warrior of the White Shield, who came from Argos in his panoply, hath been stirred by thee to headlong flight and swifter career.
Who set forth against our land by reason of the vexed claims of Polynices, and like shrill screaming eagle he flew over into our land in snow-white pinion sheathed, with an armed throng and with plumage of helms.
He paused above our dwelling. He ravened around our sevenfold portals with spears athirst for blood. But he went hence, or ever his jaws were glutted with our gore. Or the fire god's pine-fed flame had seized our crown of towers, so fierce was the noise of battle raised behind him, a thing too hard for him to conquer as he wrestled with his dragon foe. For Zeus utterly abhors the boasts of a proud tongue, and when he beheld them coming on in a great stream, in the haughty pride of clanging gold, he smote with brandished fire one who was now hasting to shout victory at his goal upon our ramparts. Swung down, he fell on the earth with a crash, torch in hand. He, who so lately in the frenzy of the mad onset was raging against us with the blasts of his tempestuous hate. But those threats fared not as he hoped, and to other foes the mighty war god dispensed their several dooms, dealing havoc around a mighty helper at our need. For seven captains at seven gates, matched against seven, left the tribute of their panoplies to Zeus, who turns the battle, save those two of cruel fate, who, born of one sire and one mother, set against each other their twain conquering spears and are sharers in a common death. But since victory of glorious name hath come to us with joy responsive to the joy of Thebe, whose chariots are many, let us enjoy forgetfulness after the late wars and visit all the temples of the gods with night-long dance and song, and may Bacchus be our leader, whose dancing shakes the land of Thebe. But lo, the king of the land comes yonder, Creon, son of Menoceus, our new ruler by the new fortunes that the gods have given. What counsel is he pondering, that he hath proposed this special conference of elders, summoned by his general mandate?
Enter Creon, from the central doors of the palace, in the garb of king, with two attendants.
Sirs, the vessel of our state, after being tossed on wild waves, hath once more been safely steadied by the gods. And ye, out of all the folk, have been called apart by my summons, because I knew, first of all, how true and constant was your reverence for the royal power of Laius. How again, when Oedipus was ruler of our land, and when he had perished, your steadfast loyalty still upheld their children? Since then his sons have fallen in one day by a twofold doom, each smitten by the other, each stained with a brother's blood. I now possess the throne, and all its powers, by nearness of kinship to the dead. No man can be fully known in soul and spirit and mind, until he hath been seen versed in rule and lawgiving. For if any, being supreme guide of the state, cleaves not to the best counsels, but through some fears, keeps his lips locked, I hold, and have ever held him most base. And if any makes a friend of more account than his fatherland, that man hath no place in my regard. For I, be Zeus my witness, who sees all things always, would not be silent if I saw ruin, instead of safety, coming to the citizens, nor would I ever deem the country's foe a friend to myself, remembering this, that our country is the ship that bears us safe, and that only while she prospers in our voyage can we make true friends. Such are the rules by which I guard this city's greatness, and in accord with them is the edict which I have now published to the folk touching the sons of Oedipus. That Eteocles, who hath fallen fighting for our city in all renown of arms, shall be entombed, and crowned with every rite that follows the noblest dead to their rest. But for his brother, Polynices, who came back from exile and sought to consume utterly with fire the city of his fathers and the shrines of his father's gods, sought to taste of kindred blood and to lead the remnant into slavery. Touching this man, it hath been proclaimed to our people that none shall grace him with sepulchre or lament, but leave him unburied, a corpse for birds and dogs to eat, a ghastly sight of shame. Such the spirit of my dealing, and never by deed of mine shall the wicked stand in honor before the just. But whoso hath good will to Thebes, he shall be honored of me in his life and in his death. Such is thy pleasure, Creon, son of Menoceus, touching this city's foe and its friend. And thou hast power, I ween, to take what order thou wilt, both for the dead and for all us who live. See then that ye be guardians of the mandate. Lay the burden of this task on some younger man. Nay, watchers of the corpse have been found. What, then, is this further charge that thou wouldst give? That ye side not with the breakers of these commands? No man is so foolish that he is enamored of death. In sooth, that is the meed. Yet lucre hath often ruined men through their hopes. A guard enters from the spectator's left. My liege, I will not say that I come breathless from speed, or that have plied a nimble foot, for often did my thoughts make me pause and wheel round in my path to return. My mind was holding large discourse with me. Fool, why goest thou to thy certain doom? Wretch, tarrying again, and if Creon hears this from another, must not thou smart for it? So, debating, I went on my way with lagging steps, and thus a short road was made long. At last, however, it carried the day that I should come hither to thee, and though my tale be not, yet will I tell it. For I come with a good grip on one hope, that I can suffer nothing but what is my fate.
And what is it that disquiets thee thus?
I wish to tell thee first about myself. I did not do the deed. I did not see the doer. It were not right that I should come to any harm.
Thou hast a shrewd eye for thy mark. Well, dost thou fence thyself round against the blame? Clearly thou hast some strange thing to tell.
Aye, truly, dread news makes one pause long.
Then tell it, wilt thou, and so get thee gone?
Well, this is it. The corpse, someone hath just given it burial and gone away, after sprinkling thirsty dust on the flesh, with some other rites as piety enjoins.
What sayest thou? What living man hath dared this deed?
I know not.
No stroke of pickaxe was seen there, no earth thrown up by mattock. The ground was hard and dry, unbroken, without track of wheels. The doer was one who had left no trace. And when the first day watchman showed it to us, sore wonder fell on all. The dead man was veiled from us, not shut within a tomb, but lightly strewn with dust, as by the hand of one who shunned a curse. And no sign met the eye as though any beast of prey or any dog had come nigh to him or torn him. Then evil words flew fast and loud among us, guard accusing guard, and it would e'en have come to blows at last, nor was there any to hinder. Every man was the culprit, and no one was convicted. But all disclaimed knowledge of the deed, and we were ready to take red-hot irons in our hands, to walk through fire, to make oath by the gods that we had not done the deed, that we were not privy to the planning or the doing. At last, when all our searching was fruitless, one spake, who made us all bend our faces on the earth in fear, for we saw not how we could gainsay him, or escape mischance if we obeyed. His counsel was that this deed must be reported to thee, and not hidden. And this seemed best, and the lot doomed my hapless self to win this prize. So here I stand, as unwelcome as unwilling. Well, I wot, for no man delights in the bearer of bad news.
O king, my thoughts have long been whispering. Can this deed, perchance, be in the work of gods?
Cease, ere thy words fill me utterly with wrath, lest thou be found at once an old man and foolish. For thou sayest what is not to be borne, in saying that the gods have care for this corpse. Was it for high reward of trusty service that they sought to hide his nakedness, who came to burn their pillared shrines and sacred treasures, to burn their land and scatter its laws to the winds? Or dost thou behold the gods honoring the wicked? It cannot be. No. From the first there were certain in the town that muttered against me, chafing at this edict, wagging their heads in secret, and kept not their necks duly under the yoke like men contented with my sway. 'Tis by them, well I know, that these have been beguiled and bribed to do this deed. Nothing so evil as money ever grew to be current among men. This lays cities low. This drives men from their homes. This trains and warps honest souls till they set themselves to works of shame. This still teaches folks to practice villainies and to know every godless deed. But all the men who wrought this thing for hire have made it sure that soon or late they shall pay the price. Now, as Zeus still hath my reverence, know this. I tell it thee on my oath. If ye find not the very author of this burial and produce him before mine eyes, death alone shall not be enough for you. Till first, hung up alive, ye have revealed this outrage, that henceforth ye may thieve with better knowledge whence lucre should be won, and learn that it is not well to love gain from every source, for thou wilt find that ill-gotten pelf brings more men to ruin than to weal. May I speak, or shall I just turn and go? Knowest thou not that even now thy voice offends? Is thy smart in the ears or in the soul? And why wouldst thou define the seat of my pain? The doer vexes thy mind, but I thine ears. Ah, thou art a born babbler, 'tis well seen. Maybe, but never the doer of this deed. Yea, and more, the seller of thy life for silver. Alas, 'tis sad, truly, that he who judges should misjudge. Let thy fancy play with judgment as it will. But if ye show me not the doers of these things, ye shall avow that dastardly gains work sorrows. Creon goes into the palace. Well, may he be found, so 'twere best. But be he caught, or be he not fortunate, must settle that. Truly thou wilt not see me here again, saved even now beyond hope and thought. I owe the gods great thanks. The guard goes out on the spectator's left.
Wonders are many, and none is more wonderful than man. The power that crosses the White Sea, driven by the stormy south wind, making a path under surges that threaten to engulf him, and Earth, the eldest of the gods, the immortal, the unwearied, doth he wear, turning the soil with the offspring of horses, as the ploughs go to and fro from year to year. And the light-hearted race of birds, and the tribes of savage beasts, and the sea-brood of the deep he snares in the meshes of his woven toils. He leads captive man excellent in wit. And he masters by his arts the beast whose lair is in the wilds, who roams the hills. He tames the horse of shaggy mane, he puts the yoke upon its neck. He tames the tireless mountain bull. And speech, and wind-swift thought, and all the moods that mould a state, hath he taught himself, and how to flee the arrows of the frost, when 'tis hard lodging under the clear sky, and the arrows of the rushing rain. Yea, he hath resource for all. Without resource he meets nothing that must come. Only against death shall he call for aid in vain, but from baffling maladies he hath devised escapes. Cunning beyond fancy's dream is the fertile skill which brings him now to evil, now to good. When he honors the laws of the land, and the justice which he hath sworn by the gods to uphold proudly stands his city, no city hath he who, for his rashness, dwells with sin. Never may he share my hearth, never think my thoughts. Who doth these things?
Enter the guard on the spectator's left, leading in Antigone.
What portent from the gods is this? My soul is amazed. I know her. How can I deny that yon maiden is Antigone? O hapless and child of hapless sire of Oedipus, what means this? Thou brought a prisoner, thou disloyal to the king's laws, and taken in folly.
Here she is, the doer of the deed, caught this girl burying him. But where is Creon?
Creon enters hurriedly from the palace.
Lo, he comes forth again from the house at our need.
What is it? What hath chanced that makes my coming timely?
O king, against nothing should men pledge their word. For the afterthought belies the first intent. I could have vowed that I should not soon be here again, scared by thy threats, with which I had just been lashed. But since the joy that surprises and transcends our hopes is like in fullness to no other pleasure, I have come, though 'tis in breach of my sworn oath, bringing this maid, who was taken showing grace to the dead. This time there was no casting of lots. No, this luck hath fallen to me, and to none else. And now, sire, take her thyself, question her, examine her, as thou wilt. But I have a right to free and final quittance of this trouble.
And thy prisoner here, how and whence hast thou taken her?
She was burying the man, thou knowest all.
Dost thou mean what thou sayest? Dost thou speak aright?
I saw her burying the corpse that thou hast forbidden to bury. Is that plain and clear?
And how was she seen, how taken in the act?
It befell on this wise. When we had come to the place, with those dread menaces of thine upon us, we swept away all the dust that covered the corpse, and bared the dank body well, and then sat us down on the brow of the hill, to windward, heedful that the smell from him should not strike us. Every man was wide awake, and kept his neighbor alert with torrents of threats, if any one should be careless of this task. So went it until the sun's bright orb stood in mid-heaven, and the heat began to burn, and then suddenly a whirlwind lifted from the earth storm of dust, a trouble in the sky, the plain marring all the leafage of its woods. And the wide air was choked therewith. We closed our eyes and bore the plague from the gods. And when after a long while the storm had passed, the maid was seen, and she cried aloud with the sharp cry of a bird in its bitterness, even as when within the empty nest it sees the bed stripped of its nestlings. So she also, when she saw the corpse bare, lifted up a voice of wailing and called down curses on the doers of that deed. And straightway she brought thirsty dust in her hands, and from a shapely ewer of bronze, held high, with thrice-poured drink offering she crowned the dead.
We rushed forward when we saw it and at once dozed upon our quarry, who was in no wise dismayed. Then we taxed her with past and present doings, and she stood not on denial of aught. At once, to my joy and to my pain, to have escaped from ills oneself is a great joy. But 'tis painful to bring friends to ill, howbeit all such things are of less account to me than mine own safety.
Thou whose face is bent to earth, dost thou avow or disavow this deed?
I avow it. I make no denial.
Creon, to guard.
Thou canst betake thee whither thou wilt, free and clear of a grave charge.
Exit guard.
To Antigone.
Now tell me, thou, not in many words, but briefly, knewest thou that an edict had forbidden this?
I knew it. Could I help it? It was public.
And thou didst indeed dare to transgress that law?
Yes. For it was not Zeus that had published me that edict. Not such are the laws set among men by the justice who dwells with the gods below, nor deemed I that thy decrees were of such force that a mortal could override the unwritten and unfailing statutes of heaven. For their life is not of today, or yesterday, but from all time, and no man knows when they were first put forth. Not through dread of any human pride could I answer to the gods for breaking these. Die must I knew that well. How should I not? Even without thy edicts. But if I am to die before my time, I count that again. For when any one lives as I do, compassed about with evils, can such a one find aught but gain in death? So for me to meet this doom is trifling grief. But if I had suffered my mother's son to lie in death an unburied corpse, that would have grieved me. For this I am not grieved. And if my present deeds are foolish in thy sight, it may be that a foolish judge arraigns my folly.
The maid shows herself passionate child of passionate sire, and knows not how to bend before troubles. Yet I would have thee know that o'er-stubborn spirits are most often humbled. 'Tis the stiffest iron baked to hardness in the fire that thou shalt oftenest see snapped and shivered. And I have known horses that show temper brought to order by a little curb. There is no room for pride when thou art thy neighbor's slave. This girl was already versed in insolence when she transgressed the laws that had been set forth. And, that done, lo, a second insult to vaunt of this and exult in her deed. Now verily I am no man, she is the man, if this victory shall rest with her and bring no penalty. No. Be she sister's child, no nearer to me in blood than any that worship Zeus at the altar of our house. She and her kinsfolk shall not avoid a doom most dire, for indeed I charge that other with a like share in the plotting of this burial, and summon her, for I saw her even now within, raving, and not mistress of her wits. So oft before the deed the mind stands self-convicted in its treason, when folks are plotting mischief in the dark. But verily this too is hateful. When one who hath been caught in wickedness then seeks to make the crime a glory.
Wouldst thou do more than take and slay me?
No more indeed, having that, I have all.
Why then dost thou delay? In thy discourse there is naught that pleases me, never may there be. And so my words must needs be unpleasing to thee, and yet for glory. Whence could I have won a nobler than by giving burial to mine own brother? All here would own that they thought it well. Were not their lips sealed by fear, but royalty, blessed in so much besides, hath the power to do and say what it will.
Thou differest from all these Thebans in that view.
These also share it, but they curb their tongues for thee.
And art thou not ashamed to act apart from them?
No. There is nothing shameful in piety to a brother.
Was it not a brother, too, that died in the opposite cause?
Brother by the same mother and the same sire.
Why, then, dost thou render a grace that is impious in his sight?
The dead man will not say that he so deems it.
Yea, if thou makest him but equal in honor with the wicked.
It was his brother, not his slave, that perished.
Wasting this land while he fell as its champion.
Nevertheless, Hades desires these rites.
But the good desires not a like portion with the evil.
Who knows, but this seems blameless in the world below.
A foe is never a friend, not even in death.
'Tis not my nature to join in hating, but in loving.
Pass, then, to the world of the dead, and it thou must needs love, love them. While I live, no woman shall rule me.
Enter Ismene from the house, led in by two attendants.
Lo, yonder Ismene comes forth, shedding such tears as fond sisters weep. A cloud upon her brow casts its shadow over her darkly flushing face, and breaks in rain on her fair cheek.
And thou, who, lurking like a viper in my house, was secretly draining my life-blood, while I knew not that I was nurturing two pests to rise against my throne. Come, tell me now, wilt thou also confess thy part in this burial, or wilt thou forswear all knowledge of it?
I have done the deed, if she allows my claim, and share the burden of the charge. Nay, justice will not suffer thee to do that. Thou didst not consent to the deed, nor did I give thee part in it. But now that ills beset thee, I am not ashamed to sail the sea of trouble at thy side. Whose was the deed? Hades and the dead are witnesses. A friend in words is not the friend that I love. Nay, sister, reject me not, but let me die with thee, and duly honor the dead.
Share not thou my death, nor claim deeds to which thou hast not put thy hand. My death will suffice.
And what life is dear to me, bereft of thee? Ask Creon, all thy care is for him. Why vex me thus, when it avails thee not? Indeed, if I mock, 'tis with pain that I mock thee. Tell me, how can I serve thee even now?
Save thyself, I grudge not thy escape.
Woe is me, and shall I have no share in thy fate?
Thy choice was to live, mine to die.
At least thy choice was not made without my protest.
One world approved thy wisdom, another mine.
Howbeit, the offense is the same for both of us. Be of good cheer, thou livest, but my life hath long been given to death, that so I might serve the dead.
Lo, one of these maidens hath newly shown herself foolish, as the other hath been since her life began.
Yea, O king, such reason as nature may have given abides not with the unfortunate, but goes astray.
Thine did, when thou chosest vile deeds with the vile.
What life could I endure without her presence?
Nay, speak not of her presence. She lives no more.
But wilt thou slay the betrothed of thine own son?
Nay, there are other fields for him to plough.
But there can never be such love as bound him to her.
I like not an evil wife for my son.
Haman, beloved, how thy father wrongs thee!
Enough, enough of thee and of thy marriage! Wilt thou indeed rob thy son of this maiden? 'Tis death that shall stay these bridles for me. 'Tis determined, it seems, that she shall die. Determined, yes, for thee and for me.
To the two attendants.
No more delay. Servants, take them within. Henceforth, they must be women, and not range at large, for verily, even the bold seek to fly when they see death now closing on their life.
Exeunt attendants, guarding Antigone and Ismene. Creon remains.
Blessed are they whose days have not tasted of evil. For when a house hath once been shaken from heaven, there the curse fails nevermore, passing from life to life of the race, even as, when the surge is driven over the darkness of the deep by the fierce breath of Thracian sea winds, it rolls up the black sand from the depths, and there is sullen roar from the wind-vexed headlands that front the blows of the storm. I see that from olden time the sorrows in the house of the Labdacidae are heaped upon the sorrows of the dead, and generation is not freed by generation, but some god strikes them down, and the race hath no deliverance. For now that hope of which the light had been spread above the last root of the house of Oedipus, that hope in turn is brought low by the blood-stained dust due to the gods infernal, and by folly in speech the frenzy at the heart. Thy power, O Zeus, what human trespass can limit, that power which neither sleep, the all-ensnaring, nor the untiring months of the gods can master? But thou, O ruler, to whom time brings not old age, dwellest in the dazzling splendor of Olympus. And through the future, near and far, as through the past, shall this law hold good. Nothing that is vast enters into the life of mortals without a curse. For that hope, whose wanderings are so wide, is to many men a comfort, but to many a false lure of giddy desires, and the disappointment comes on one who knoweth not till he burn his foot against the hot fire. For with wisdom hath some one given forth a famous saying, that evil seems good, soon or late, to him whose mind the god draws to mischief, and but for the briefest space doth he fare free of woe. But lo, Haman, the last of thy sons, comes he grieving for the doom of his promised bride, Antigone, and bitter for the baffled hope of his marriage. Enter Haman.
We shall know soon, better than seers could tell us. My son, hearing the fixed doom of thy betrothed, art thou come in rage against thy father? Or have I thy good will, act how I may?
Father, I am thine, and thou, in thy wisdom, tracest for me rules which I shall follow. No marriage shall be deemed by me a greater gain than by good guidance.
Yea, this, my son, should be thy heart's fixed law, in all things to obey thy father's will. 'Tis for this that men pray to see dutiful children grow up around them in their homes, that such may requite their father's foe with evil, and honor as their father doth his friend. But he who begets unprofitable children, what shall we say that he hath sown, but troubles for himself, and much triumph for his foes? Then do not thou, my son, at pleasure's beck, dethrone thy reason for a woman's sake, knowing that this is a joy that soon grows cold in clasping arms, an evil woman to share thy bed and thy home. For what wound could strike deeper than a false friend? Nay, with loathing, and as if she were thine enemy, let this girl go to find a husband in the house of Hades. For since I have taken her alone of all the city in open disobedience, I will not make myself a liar to my people. I will slay her. So let her appeal as she will to the majesty of kindred blood. If I am to nurture mine own kindred in naughtiness, needs must I bear with it in aliens. He who does his duty in his own household will be found righteous in the state also. But if any one transgresses and does violence to the laws or things to dictate to his rulers, such an one can win no praise from me. No, whomsoever the city may appoint, that man must be obeyed, in little things and great, in just things and unjust, and I should feel sure that one who thus obeys would be a good ruler, no less than a good subject, and in the storm of spears would stand his ground where he was set, loyal and dauntless at his comrade's side. But disobedience is the worst of evils. This it is that ruins cities. This makes homes desolate. By this the ranks of allies are broken into headlong rout. But of the lives whose course is fair, the greater part owes safety to obedience. Therefore, we must support the cause of order, and in no wise suffer a woman to worst us. Better to fall from power, if we must, by a man's hand, than we should not be called weaker than a woman. To us, unless our years have stolen our wit, thou seemest to say wisely what thou sayest. Father, the gods implant reason in men, the highest of all things that we call our own. Not mine the skill, far from me be the quest, to say wherein thou speakest not aright,
and yet another man too might have some useful thought. At least it is my natural office to watch, on thy behalf, all that men say or do or find to blame. For the dread of thy frown forbids the citizens to speak such words as would offend thine ear, but can hear these murmurs in the dark, these moanings of the city for this maiden. No woman, they say, ever merited her doom less. None ever was to die so shamefully for deeds so glorious as hers, who, when her own brother had fallen in bloody strife, would not leave him unburied, to be devoured by carrion dogs or by any bird. Deserves not she the meed of golden honor? Such is the darkling rumor that spreads in secret. For me, my father, no treasure is so precious as thy welfare. What indeed is the nobler ornament for children than a prospering sire's fair fame, or for sire than sons? Wear not then one mood only in thyself. Think not that thy word and thine alone must be right. For if any man thinks that he alone is wise, that in speech or in mind he hath no peer, such a soul, when laid open, is ever found empty. No, though a man be wise, 'tis no shame for him to learn many things and to bend in season. Seest thou beside the wintry torrent's course, how the trees that yield to it save every twig, while the stiff-necked perish root and branch? And even thus, he who keeps the sheet of his sail taut and never slackens it upsets his boat and finishes his voyage with keel uppermost. Nay, forego thy wrath. Permit thyself to change. For if I, a younger man, may offer my thought, it were far best, I ween, that men should be all wise by nature. But otherwise and oft the scale inclines not so. 'Tis good also to learn from those who speak aright.
Sire, 'tis meet that thou shouldst profit by his words. If he speaks aught in season, and thou, Haman, by thy fathers, for on both parts there hath been wise speech.
Men of my age were indeed to be schooled, then, by men of his, in nothing that is not right. But if I am young, thou shouldest look to my merits, not to my years.
Is it a merit to honor the unruly?
I could wish no one to show respect for evildoers.
Then is not she tainted with that malady?
Our Theban folk with one voice denies it.
Shall Thebes prescribe to me how I must rule?
See, there thou hast spoken like a youth indeed.
Am I to rule this land by other judgment than mine own?
That is no city which belongs to one man.
Is not the city held to be the ruler's?
Thou wouldst make a good monarch of a desert.
This boy, it seems, is the woman's champion.
If thou art a woman, indeed, my care is for thee.
Shameless, at open feud with thy father.
Nay, I see thee offending against justice.
Do I offend when I respect mine own prerogatives?
Thou dost not respect them when thou tramplest on the gods' honors.
Oh, dastard nature, yielding place to woman!
Thou wilt never find me yield to baseness.
All thy words, at least, plead for that girl.
And for thee, and for me, and for the gods below.
Thou canst never marry her on this side the grave.
Then she must die, and in death destroy another.
How? Doth thy boldness run to open threats?
What threat is it to combat vain resolves?
Thou shalt rue thy witless teaching of wisdom.
Wert thou not my father, I would have called thee unwise.
Thou woman's slave, use not wheedling speech.